Hey guys, this is Asif Mandoza, and this is the very first episode of High Ticket Contractor Podcast. Usually, the first episode is the worst, and then as you progress on, things start to become a little bit better and faster as a speaker starts to develop a rhythm. And so, I apologize for for this one being a little bit slow, but you know what? As we move forward, things are going to get really, really quick. But in this episode, I wanted to share with you a little bit about who I am and my backstory so that you understand who you're listening to moving forward. So let's get into it. So the big question is this: how are corporate contractors, 1099s, independent consultants, experts, whatever you want to call us, who worked hard to develop our skills and didn't settle with the regular 9-to-5, who broke free and went out on our own, how do we market and deliver our skills to the clients who need them most? How do we keep getting high-end clients, build up our portfolios, and close more deals consistently while creating a predictable and profitable solo business? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. All right, guys, let's get into this. It was funny, I was just sitting here on my phone going through a lot of these pictures, and I was like, oh my God, there's so much history here. And I wish that you could see it, but unfortunately on the podcast, you're going to have to just hear me out as I go through some of this stuff here. But I don't necessarily talk too much about this stuff, but I'm known as a high-ticket corporate consultant or a contractor. In other words, you know, an independent contract worker or a 1099. And I work with very large businesses or large brands, okay? And so I've served and closed some of the largest deals, some of the over the past 8+ years now, almost a decade now. And some of my clients have been the Fortune Top 50, Top 100, Top 500, as well as the government itself. So it's really been some of the world's largest organizations that I've had the pleasure of working with. And just to run through a couple of these here, I mean, some of the clients have been Honda Acura. I mean, this is one of the world's largest companies they make over $18 trillion a year. It was incredible. I had a chance to help them out with selling cars over the internet, right? And the cool part was that I got to repeatedly see various old cars, like classic cars they had in their showrooms, some of the newest cars that they had along the lines of their Acura NSX lines. It was incredible. It was a very interesting experience there. I had closed another high ticket deal with a brand called Scotiabank, which is an internationally known top 5 bank here in Canada. They're valued just north of $998 billion with a B, so it's quite huge. I myself personally had an opportunity to work with the teams out in Mexico City to complete some of the bank transformations that were happening there. They're kind of transitioning their branches to more digital and remove a lot of the overhead that they had there, a lot of tellers that they had with technology. So it was an interesting transformation that we did there on some of their projects. Another time I closed a deal with a bank called BMO, which was the Bank of Montreal. It's one of the top 5 banks here in Canada. They were valued over $550 billion at the time, and I think they're worth a lot more now. Now, what was crazy was I had the opportunity to see an actual bank vault here. You know, the huge, those massive vaults you see in the movies sometimes. And I can tell you, it's in a 72-story building in the core of Toronto, Ontario. It's kind of like Wall Street, but we call it Bay Street over here. And it's literally in the basement. You go down there, there's no windows at all. I'm just looking at a picture here right now. It's literally those big, heavy iron doors that open up. But what they did was they gutted it out and they made it into offices. So you can literally use the space for meeting rooms. The reception there is just terrible because of the infrastructure of all the metal that's surrounding it. But it's an actual vault. It was pretty interesting to work out of there and serve them. Another time I dealt with an innovative health and nutrition company. I had the opportunity to see this startup grow from 0 users to 10,000 users. It was extremely exciting for them. Not only that, but work with them in signing a $300,000 deal with investors on their first round of investment, and really helped them gain some local media attention along the way there, which was pretty exciting. Another time I'd close a deal with PwC. This, I mean, it's a well-known brand, PricewaterhouseCoopers. They generate over $41 billion a year. One of the top-tier organizations out there. And another time I closed another high-ticket deal with the government itself. It's the transit agency, Metrolinx, here in Toronto. And they serve, I think, over 250,000 riders that use their services daily, on a daily basis. So it's huge. It's infrastructure that's used here regularly. And I had the opportunity to work with them on multiple different projects and help them move their technology into the future and make it easier for riders to commute around and network with 8 different regions across the city itself too as well. So I got very involved with that. And just, you know, this is just one of many views to give you an idea of what corporate consulting looks like. When you get in, you get to work with some of these brands and on some of their really first line innovative projects that they have going on. I've been able, and out of all that, from doing this type of work, personally myself, I've been able to design and build my own dream home, you know, buy my family members new cars, have been able to travel the world amongst many, many things. I think we've traveled to about 30 plus countries in the last 5 or 6 years alone with the family. And I've been able to meet a lot of new individuals along the way and really learn about cultures across the world. I mean, I can't stress this enough, but traveling alone has given me the ability to experience and appreciate the diversity that we have, right? And really understand different viewpoints from various different people around the world and appreciate that. Also, it's provided me to give back to the community. We've been able to give back to the homeless shelters here and senior homes. We had the opportunity here just a couple of years ago to give back 850 meals. We went out into the city and started donating them to a lot of the senior homes here, and it was really a really humbling experience. Personally as well, we were able to open our home to becoming a foster relief care home for the Children's Aid Society, and it's been very interesting to see children come on through and really provide them a safe place to stay for a short period of time until they move on. So it's given us a really great opportunity to give back at the same time as having a really fulfilling career. And so but you know what, enough about all the great stuff. I mean, it really didn't start like that for me. Like let me explain. I mean, I grew up in a small town called Hamilton. It's nicknamed Steel City. And I grew up with entrepreneurial parents who immigrated to the country, literally. They literally came here with nothing and got us, you know, working with them, you know, hustling in the beginning. And my parents, both of them, I mean, they worked 2-3 jobs until they created their own businesses of their own. And it was basically retail shops that they owned. They owned quite a few, just a handful, but they opened up shop in the core city of Hamilton, and they created hardware stores as well as children clothing stores when there was no Rona, Home Depot, none of those big box stores around. So it really gave them the opportunity to get into the market and serve the market. And they, you know, they did well for 10 to 15 years up until I was about 16 or so. And unfortunately at that time, you know, I worked very close with my family, especially my father and my mother. And really loved what they were doing at the time. And so they were really preaching, you know, do good in school, get a job, and you'll do really well. But they never really promoted what they were doing. But I really loved what they were up to day in, day out. I was there daily. Right after school, I'd join them in their retail stores and help them out. Summertimes, that's where I would be. You know, it was my second home. The mall was my second home. It's hilarious. And so when I turned 16, unfortunately, my father had a heart attack, and that really hit us hard. It shut down. We literally shut down for a bit at the time, and we really didn't know what to do. We were at a loss because he was literally the guy who was telling us where to go, what to do, how to do it. And so here he had a couple of businesses, and me and my mother really didn't know what to do with these businesses. And I was 16 at the time. And so I had to take over the business with her, try to run these stores, manage these employees, manage payroll, get inventory, ship the inventory, price everything out, put it on, right? And really understand how to answer questions when customers were coming in, and I'm a 16-year-old kid. And I remember it was hard, it was difficult, and we couldn't really do it. We did it for a couple of years, and unfortunately, we had to shut it down as a business declined. That was probably the hardest thing to see, is to see something my father built up 15 years, and for us to wrap it up and to pack everything away, sell everything off, and ship everything out. And store all the racks and all the tables, you know, close off all the leases and the malls and the stores and the signage. It's a lot of stuff. Especially for a kid, right, at the time. And so I did it. We got out of there and we moved to a city called Toronto, Ontario. So we literally packed up everything and created a new life in a brand new city, closer to home, closer to family. Now with me, I mean, I turned 17 at the time, and you know what? I'm still an entrepreneur, kind of, right? A lot of that stuff rubbed off on me, and so I had there's some stock left over from the stores. So and I was really into like knives. I'm not anymore, but at that time, at that age, as a kid, you're looking at these collector knives, and you're like, wow, this is incredible. So what did I do? I opened up. I basically went to the used the stock and rented a small booth at a local flea market here in Toronto. Just outside the city, set up shop on the weekends, and I used to sell knives. I didn't do that for too long. The flea market itself, I mean, it was going out of business as time went on. The rent was becoming harder and harder to pay on a monthly basis, so I had to close it down. And in those years, again, I don't know if anyone remembers, but magic was a big thing on TV. And me as being a kid, I was really into it. I thought it was extremely impressive. And there were multiple shows running at once in the evenings. And so naturally, I was intrigued by it. And I noticed that there might be an opportunity there. So I began figuring out how to make magic tricks and how to sell them too as well, to get all the raw materials and put it together, package it, and sell it online. So what did I do is I started figuring out how they worked. And then I naturally packaged them up. I went on to eBay, created a little store on eBay, and started selling them on eBay. I ran that for a bit, which helped me through school a little bit at the time, and it faded. I mean, as the trend faded, it faded, and it stopped. And then I lost interest in that. And the next thing I got into was, cell phones started to take off slowly at the time. And I remember I got my second cell phone at the time. It was a BlackBerry smartphone, a really old one. It was like a 7100 something at the time. And so when I looked at it, it was so ugly. It had like the worst user interface. It had like these buttons with like, you know, it looked like someone drew it on with their hand. Like that was the icons. And so I got into like figuring out how to customize my own screen and make it look cool, because I was a bit into design and web development at the time. And so I created a couple of templates and buttons and just themes that they called back then. And I found out how to do it. And then, you know, my entrepreneurial instincts kicked in. I was like, how do I sell this? So I jumped online and I tried selling it. I created a website called BlackBerry Theme Packs at the time. And I sold these themes for like $20, $10. And people started buying them. But as time went on again, you know, people, to the technology improved. And I didn't want to support all these different brands and different model numbers, because you have to create a theme for each one. So I stopped doing that. And I moved on to something else. And because of that experience, it lended me to understanding how to make websites. And so I jumped into creating websites. I was a little bit of a freelancer at the time, a web designer and developer. Now, the problem at the time was I needed customers, right? I'm still a kid that I didn't know how to do this stuff. So I made my own flyers and printed them out on a home printer, I remember. I borrowed a car and started driving around the city to all the local businesses and walked into the shops and handed them, you know, all these businesses, these flyers that I made with my prices right on them. It was hilarious. After some time of doing this and getting zero callbacks, right, what I did was, this is another strategy I did. I just printed out more flyers, and then I used the postal service. All right. So I literally used my home printer, printed out like hundreds of flyers, went to the post office and asked them, you know, at their business services team, hey, I got to target these postal codes, can you send them out? And they said yes, there's actually a program. So I paid for that and I did that. And then as I was running out of advertising dollars, it was costing me every time to drive out there to print them out, to do this, to buy more ink for my home printer. It was insane. It was nuts. that's when I saw the Yellow Pages phone book, and I was like, okay, you know what? I gotta scale this somehow. I gotta reduce my cost. And it had a business section in the Yellow Pages itself. It's like a local phone directory here in Toronto at the time. And it had a business section in it, which had all these advertisements of local businesses advertising. I thought this was gold for me. So I went through the directory and I wrote down all the businesses' fax numbers, right? Because they all had faxes back then. So I took all their fax numbers, and I had this old dusty fax machine at home. I pulled that thing out and I ran all these numbers through the fax machine, and I took my flyer and started faxing them all out. Right? And I faxed it to all these businesses and started shooting them out one by one. And what happened was we were faced with a lot of complaints coming back. People calling my phone number where the fax was coming from and saying not to advertise. And so I stopped that really quick. And then over time, I got a couple of clients and customers through that, but the overhead of supporting them and doing a lot of the small micro changes to the sites just drove me nuts. I was like, you know, I can't do this. So I stopped doing that and I shut that down. I remember at the time I was interested in creating, you know, some sort of online app, right? An online portfolio for myself. And so I wanted to. Once I did that, I created my own kind of website where I could put in my stuff and showcase it to the world. It was kind of like a LinkedIn today, but back then LinkedIn wasn't a big thing. So it's kind of like an online portfolio. And once I did that, I was like, hey, you know what? Maybe other people would love to do the same thing too. So I tried turning that into a business as well. So I went ahead and created a website for other creators who could publish their online portfolios onto this little website that I created. And so after some time, this too had been lost. It was a lost project and didn't work out. And so, after that time, I launched another 6 small ventures, right? From a lead generation service to a digital development agency, a pay stub creation app, an e-commerce plugin. And the list goes on, right? I just started creating, trying to create something to take off, to move forward, right? And I remember, that's when family and friends looked at me and they're like, okay, you know what, Asif, you need to stop. And the truth is I felt exhausted, right? And I was telling family members, everything's fine, you know, everything's working, everything's going. But I was really truthfully just spinning my wheels, right? Through so many small little ventures and hacks and just trying to do anything to make ends meet. I was putting in an insane amount of time, right? Staying up late nights and putting an effort into trying to get something, anything off the ground at the time. And I remember it, I appeared to be happy on the outside, but on the inside, I was freaking out. I didn't feel sure of myself or confident. I felt lost, right? I felt confused and frustrated, I think, at times, thinking, you know, why couldn't just make this work? And it's not moving in the right direction. And everyone in the family had a business, right? I come from a family of entrepreneurs, right? Even extended family members. So working a 9-to-5 is like out of the question for them. But for some reason, for me, it was like, you know, that was my destiny, these guys were saying. So I had to figure this business thing out on my own. But honestly, I just wanted to prove to my family that, you know what, I could do this too. And it was hard. But at this point, it was becoming very difficult and for my mother and I to pay our bills. And so she was like, you know what, she was a sole breadwinner at the time, and it was becoming more and more difficult. I had to make a decision. And so the decision was that in order to help the family out with bills, like, I needed to do something, and I needed to bring in money to help support the house. So that's when one day my mother told me, just give up, and told me to get into the 9-to-5, you know, just go work a job. And work a stable, more so-called predictable job. And I remember her saying that, stable and predictable. She said entrepreneurship wasn't for me, right? And that taking on a more stable form of work would be better for my future. And so, you know what? That's what I believed. I was like, okay, that kind of makes sense. Let's do this. So I felt, even though I felt frustrated on the inside, right? And on one end, you know, an entrepreneur's wife, my mother, was telling me, hey, I wasn't a good fit for entrepreneurship. I was angry too that I couldn't get it to work, but I had to make a decision. And so off I went. I jumped into the world of full-time work, of security. And everyone called it secure, right, at the time. I went ahead and found an opportunity through referrals within my immediate network and extended family members at the time, I remember. And this was my, first crack at the job. So I was ecstatic. I was so excited. This was one of the first times I was exposed to the professional environment, right? It was an office building, right? It was a call center, and it was in the old part of town here downtown. I remember it took me about an hour to drive into the city from where I was, and I had to pay for parking, which was new for me at the time, because I had to pay for gas too, and then out parking, so it was a lot. I wasn't making much money, right? And even that was a lot for me to dish out. So I started working for the first time. I began getting used to how things worked in the 9 to 5. After about some time at the company, I noticed my work beginning to feel mundane, right? It was just the same stuff over and over again. I felt like I was working on the same things. And I always loved learning new things. I was up to the challenge, right? Due to my past history and my past experience. But it seemed I learned everything there was to learn in the role that I was working at the time. And at the same time, I was hearing that you needed to keep updating your skills, right? Everyone used to say this, update your skills and abilities to be competitive in the marketplace. So every day that passed, I felt like I was wasting my time, right? And fearful that my skills and abilities were slowly becoming out of date and that I would be left behind. And even asking for more responsibilities, it seemed like my manager at the time, he had limits to what he could do. Right, to help me out. No matter how much work I asked for or how good I did, right, and from a performance standpoint, I felt stuck. I felt like I was constrained in learning new things and growing professionally, right? And it sucked. There was no growth, right? I felt stuck in an environment which wasn't equipped to help me grow as an individual or keep up my skills to up to date in the market. I didn't feel like I was progressing or learning new things at all, right? There was no growth at all there. And it's just weird, awkward sensation of not being able to do more than I knew I could. And so I decided to leave the company and move on at that point. And I jumped into the market again, search for a new role, a new job. And I finally found a role at a place I could call home, which was 2 hours away from where I lived at the time. I was excited, but it was 2 hours. It was a long drive, right, to get there one way. So that's 4 hours in a day. It's insane. But you know what? I was excited. It was a firm which created software for colleges and universities. So I thought there had to be lots to learn, right? They're creating stuff for educational firms. Why not? I started working and I began getting to know how everything worked there, right? As a couple of years went by and I progressed in my work at the company, there was an announcement made that, that this company, to all the employees, basically, they were told that they're being sued from one of its competitors. Due to patent infringement. And it's not something they intentionally did. They just didn't know that they're stepping on patents. And so this company turned around and was like, hey, we're going to sue you. And it was like for an obscene amount of money for this company at the time, right? It was a surprise to everybody. For the first time in my life at the time, I realized that the 9 to 5 job is not secure as everyone tells you it is, right? And that's when I was shaken. Right, and I didn't like it at all. Because it was not in my control, and that's what set a little bit of fear in me. And I didn't feel secure in my new career. I was like, what is this, right? If anyone outside of the organization can impact my life, how can this be secure, right? I thought, what if this hit the company hard financially? What would happen then, right? How would I be affected, or others for that matter? I didn't deserve this, and neither did anyone else at the company, right? But I didn't feel safe or secure at all. And at the same time, many other full-time employees there had felt the same thing, right? And started to leave the company because they got scared. They started jumping ship. And they went to a neighboring company there called, everyone probably knows this, it's called BlackBerry, RIM, right? Research in Motion, one of Canada's largest organizations that created the BlackBerry. And a lot of them jumped ship and went over there. In hopes to find a secure future for themselves. And we kind of know what happened to RIM now. I don't think they were secure there. So hoping their new companies would not get sued. Now, they didn't get sued, but they definitely faded out of trend, right? We know that. So, but at the time I was shaken a bit, right? But I decided to stick around. right? Because I was still young. I was like, you know what? Let me just see what's happening here. Everyone's leaving. Maybe I can find an opportunity, right? So then another 6 months go by at the company, and the company announced that they had to move to becoming more innovative now. How many times have we heard that, right? And they said that they had to adapt to the market's needs. The company had to do things differently. It was more agile on how to operate inside. And basically, they had to take everything inside the company and redo it, right? So that it operated completely differently. So the company announced a massive restructure of all the departments across the board. Basically, they were going to change the way they worked, which meant they were going to move teams, add new teams, remove redundant teams at the company. And it didn't make sense to keep around for the new, it didn't make sense to keep around the old way of doing things for the new vision the owner had at the time. And you know what? There was so much panic. Everyone was panicking. Started seeing whole departments being shut down, large groups of full-time employees being let go from top level all the way down to the bottom level. So they didn't care, because at the end of the day, this organization needed to survive in the market. It's not about the employees at this point. It's about, you know, doing what the organization needs to get done in order to survive. And so people in the company were afraid, and there was panic. Again, at this time, I didn't feel secure at all and was a little angry again and frustrated that this was what employees had to deal with, right? It was as if freedom was taken away from us and we had to just deal with it, right? With whatever was going on to happen, which was totally out of everyone's control, right? And I asked myself at the time, I remember, it's like, was this really what security felt like? You know, what our parents tell us? Is this what it is? This is what security is? And so in the end, I realized I wasn't in control of what could happen to a company. And I was a fool to believe that nothing bad would impact me directly. Right? That's when I decided that this was not meant for me. And I left the company. Right? There's no security. So I jumped into the market again and searched for another organization. And I had finally found a role at a new part of the company. And this time I was excited. Right? It was in a growing part of the organization, and I needed the change. So I started working and began getting to know how everything worked there, right? There was this thing called a yearly employee development plan. I remember they called it the PDP, Professional Development Plan, where employees were paid out a bonus at the end of the year based on how well they did throughout the year. So they would be measured, right? And I began to spend time working on my professional development plan with my manager at the time. Right. I remember I moved across the street, right across the street, to spend so much more time on this organization, right? And making sure that I exceeded the expectations, right? I spent time outside of work, late nights at the office, right, completing extra work to ensure I was doing more than expected. I remember I had to miss birthday parties for family members because of how important this was to me, right? And I remember when review time came up at the end of the year to assess my performance with my manager, he was impressed at the amount of work I did in a year and was very super excited, right? And it was a pleasure working with him at the time. But I remember him sighing. I remember we were in this small little room and everyone's just like a conveyor belt. Everyone's going through this room one by one with the manager while he pulled up our files. And we had those uncomfortable discussions. And I remember him, you know, looking at my file, looking at all the work I did, and I you know, I had to kind of show a little bit of what I did and how I did it. And he loved it. And he goes, asked if you, and I remember him saying this. He goes, "You're doing an amazing job this year," right? And then he goes, "Unfortunately, the company isn't doing too well." He said that. He goes, "You're doing great, but the company isn't doing too well." And then that's when, you know, I was like, oh my God, what is he going to say next? Right. And then he passed over a sheet of paper. And with it, you know, he put in there a bonus on there. Right. And I look down at the piece of paper and I look at, you know, all the great things that's written on it. And I look at it's like a general form. And on there, you get to write in the bonus. Right. And I see that he's written on this line, it's $150 as a bonus, just enough to pay for my coffee for 1 month. And I was like, that is what I worked for all year? I was shocked, I felt like it was unfair. I remember getting angry inside at the company, right? It's not my manager's fault, and I knew that. Right? I had put in all this effort in doing more than what I was expected to, moved across the street, dumped in all this time, right? Sacrificed on family, birthday parties, time with family for $150 at the end of the year, right? And I had put in all this effort. Even though I was disappointed, I remember saying, okay, no problem, right? I just shook it off because I respected my manager. And he's like, you know what, maybe next time, right? Next year. And then I was like, okay, you know, I put my head down and I said, I'll keep at it. And I hope that the company did well next year, right? So what did I do? Well, I put my head down for the rest of the year again, put in a lot of time and not only achieving, but overperforming, right, for the year on my end of year goals, basically. And I remember I had completed a lot of extra work for my manager, right? I took on extra projects that he was coming up with. I was entertaining every idea that he was coming up with, right? For the betterment of the companies, right? To make sure that the company's products and services were pushed forward, that were contributing and giving back, right? So I spent so much time after hours and in the evening times too as well on personal development plan, on training myself, reading extra materials, books, courses, right? Worked on making things much more effective for the company, worked on helping out in various different projects, right? Put an effort into things outside of my job description. I was doing so much that I was not expected to do. And not just once, but several times throughout the year. And then again, end of year comes up and it's review time. And it came up at the end of the year to assess how well I did again. And it was that same setup, right? Assembly line going through that little office with my manager. And it was my turn. And I went up and I showed him everything that I did. And he knew because he was involved heavily at the time with me. And again, he was impressed with the amount of work I had accomplished by the end of the year. He had worked closely with me throughout the year too as well on a lot of the stuff, right? And then in that instant, I could see the disappointment in his face too as well. Right? Not me, but what he was about to say next. And he wasn't comfortable with what he was about to say next. He felt uncomfortable. And I'm laughing, but, you know, this happened so long ago, but I remember it. It's funny now, but back then it was serious because of the amount of time I put in, right? And he released the sigh and he said, Asif, like, it's been incredibly difficult for the company this year. And despite all the effort and progress you've made, I'm sorry to say this is the best that we can do. And I remember him saying that. This is the best we can do. And again, he handed me that piece of paper. And on that paper, I read it. And I shook his hand and, you know, I left. And I read that line at the bottom of that piece of paper to see what that bonus was going to be. And it was $200. All right. And it was in that moment, my heart sank. I felt hopeless. I was like, all my efforts weren't taken seriously and it wasn't fair. Right. I felt just like deflated, defeated, putting in all this time and all this effort into this organization. Right. Promised that they would do well, you know, in the following year. And it wasn't true, right? It is not something that I could control. And I remember going outside and thinking for a bit and just taking a walk and just be like, what, you know, what can I do, right? Thinking about all the effort that I put into growing, contributing, not just myself, but the company as well. And in the end, I get enough to fill up another tank of gas to go home for that, you know, 2-hour trip back to the home. And so I was like, you know what? Honestly, even though I lived across the street, I would go home on the weekends. And so I was like, you know what? It's gonna take me 2 hours to get back to my, you know, my mom's house. And so this is just going to pay for gas. That's it. And so in the end, it wasn't worth my time. I realized that an effort for the reward that I was getting in return, there was no reward for the amount of work and time that I was dumping into this. Even though I went above and beyond the expectations, the reward for me wasn't there. Right. That's when I decided to leave the company and started aggressively looking for another role. So I jumped into the market And again, I searched and I searched for another full-time role, I remember at the time. And that's when I finally found a role at a large financial institution uptown the city here. I was excited. It was one of the top banks here in Canada again, right? And I started working and began getting to know how everything worked at the organization. Right now, as time went on in the company, I noticed that the work was being passed over to me one project at a time, and it kept on coming, one thing after the other, right? Even though I wasn't interested in some of the projects, like I really didn't want to work on them, but I knew the benefit of them, they were just being passed over, and that's how things worked in a corporate environment. Now, even after voicing several times on what I wanted to work on with my manager, he could only give me what was needed to be done at the time in the department, and it really didn't have much of a choice in that, right? Or I had to wait for a very long period of time before any discussions began, but like 6 months to about a year or so. And then next thing you knew, it's been a full year, right? Until you get to work on something you really wanted to, right? After begging and just asking about it. So this was far too long. Just to hear if, if there was interesting work ahead, it was just too long of a waiting period. So I felt like I didn't have much to say in the work I was doing. And the process was slow and sluggish at best, right? I felt like I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. Not because I didn't want to, but because things moved very slowly and it felt draining, right? I felt like I was some sort of corporate puppet, and a puppeteer was pulling my strings on where my career would go. I didn't feel like I was in control or had the freedom of choice I wanted to have, right? I did what everyone else did and forced myself to find the good in what I was doing and just kept my head down, right? Even though I was being eaten on the inside, craving for control and autonomy, in shaping my destiny, right? But at the end of the day, there was no freedom of choice or control in what I was doing there. I felt like a hamster in a wheel, just doing it because I was told to, and as time went on, I would be lucky if anything aligned with my interests. Then one day, I remember this is one of those days that you don't forget. I remember my manager at the bank talking about how the company was bringing on a new team member, right, for our department. And usually it was another full-time employee, right? And there's this whole routine that you go through. But this time was different. It was a very different type of specialist that came in. They called her an independent contract consultant or an independent contractor. She was needed to fulfill a specific skill set on the team, I remember, for just a year, right? You see, she had full choice of working with us if she wanted to work with us or not. Right. She chose to come work with our department at the time because we aligned to what she was looking for. And once she was finished doing the length of her contract with us or her period of time, she would move on to the next company and work with a new client of her choosing while learning and building her experience along the way within her specialty. And because and basically did this as her career. This was basically what she was doing. Moving from one company to the next. So we had thought, oh, our manager will just dump all the work on her and she'll have to make do with it. But that wasn't the case. You see, she was working and billing our department hourly, which meant that for every hour she worked with us, she charged us, right? That way, my manager couldn't just dump all the work on her to get it done. It would cost us way too much. Right? It was a way, in a way, this consultant was protected by the very nature of the work arrangement or the agreement. She was less stressed than we full-timers were at the time because she could control the amount of time she actually worked instead of us salary workers who would just get bombarded with a lot of work that we would have to take home, whereas she did not. And so that's where I was a little surprised. At that time, when I realized that, I was shocked. I thought this was amazing, a real consultant in a way, right? I had heard of them, but never really worked with one up close until this period of time at the bank. And so I was intrigued. I remember the next day going on a coffee break with my manager at the time to get more details about this new contract consultant or this contractor. I asked him more about what she did, right? He told me that she was a freelancer, a freelance contractor, who was brought on to fulfill a need on the team, right? We needed some development work on done. And so she came on to fulfill that. But as we started talking, he said something that he previously had done something similar in the past, right, himself, and started joking at how much he was able to bill back in the day, as they were well over six figures to multiple six figures, as it was a quick in and out gig. I was shocked. I really couldn't believe it at the time. I'm like, really? Is that how much these guys make? And so all she had to do was complete the work and complete the term of her contract, and she was a free agent to choose what other contract and work she wanted to take on next. It was all up to her. So she seemed to have the flexibility and freedom of choice over who and what she wanted to work on. I was very interested, right? Because this was something that was valuable to me, is that flexibility and that freedom. So I was extremely interested when I found out about that. Then she also had the ability to take as much time off as she needed to, right? As my manager wasn't paying her for her time, for her off time, right? So his attitude towards this was as long as the work was done, he was fine. Even if she wasn't available for a couple of months, he's like, it's fine. As long as the work is completed on time. Right? As a full-timer, I barely got 2-3 weeks, I remember, of vacation time at the company. This contractor seemingly had an unlimited amount of time off. It was up to her. And I was shocked. I was like, wow. If she could afford it, then sure, why not, right? He had also mentioned in the discussion, that coffee break, like he said that because she moved from one contract or one client to the next, she had this diverse exposure in her industry, which showed that she was well-rounded, right? Which meant, essentially, she was seen as an expert from a manager because of her being up to date in her industry from different companies and experiences. Because of her jumping around and going from gig to gig, she was able to get her hands wet in so many different things within her specific specialty. So it was building up her experience. That's when it hit me. She was working for herself as a business owner of one who could decide when she wanted to work and when she didn't. Not to mention all the new experiences along the way that she would gain from going from one client to the next. That was amazing to me at the time. Right? She literally had this freedom of choice, flexibility of time. She had justified her high prices or high hourly rate as being a solopreneur. And she was gaining the latest industry experience along the way by doing what she already would have been doing in a regular 9-to-5 job. Right? Consistently over various deals along her career. Thus, it was securing her own future. How cool was that? I remember at the time thinking, if I could do this, because I remember her coming into the organization. I remember, if I could do this, if I could just switch over and do what I did today just as a contractor, it would be amazing. I also remember hung up in that moment questioning if I was good enough. I was like, can I do it? Is that even a possibility for me? Am I even good enough? Do I need like 20 years, 30 years, 10 years, 5 years? And I didn't have the years of experience or certifications, right? Through the roof in what I was doing professionally at the time. And I was asking myself, don't I need these things to do what she was doing? I only had about 2 years of experience, I remember, in what I was doing professionally, right? And I was questioning, was I good enough to be a contractor? So what did I do? So I remember I quickly went online and started searching for contractors online, right? I could find on social platforms. And as I scanned through hundreds of profiles online, I noticed that there weren't any different than I was, right? There was something, when I looked at all the profiles, as a matter of fact, they either had more experience, which is fine, right? The same experience and even less experience than I did, and were successfully contracting and doing what this, you know, what she was doing. And so there was varying levels of experience that I noticed and education between all of them. It wasn't like there was this magic formula, right? That's when I asked myself, if they could do it, then maybe I could too, right? That's when I was like, I gotta get into this. Sounds very interesting. I didn't want to let imposter syndrome affect my progress to grow. So in that moment, I made the most important decision, which would change the course of my life forever from that point on. And that's when it happened. I said no to my full-time 9-to-5 job. That never gave me a sense of security, autonomy, freedom, flexibility, or the money. I put in my 2 weeks notice, I remember, and left the bank. Right? Not a lot of people would do that, but I did it. And I was determined to become a successful contractor, I remember. So off I went. I had a passion for tech, and the startup scene at the time was prime. Right? So I naturally started running to networking events, in-person networking events, in the local startup communities around the city here in Toronto. I remember there was so much buzz around new tech, and everyone was looking to get stuff done for their new startup and app ideas. It was at this time I bumped into a founder of a small startup who had a business in the nutrition space. And after a few meetings, the founder of the small startup, I closed the deal and started working with them. I was excited. This was my first contract as a consultant. After 4 to 5 months of dedicated hard work, again, there was news that the company wasn't doing so well financially. The founders had split up and the news hit that the company was going to shut down. And in that moment, I remember, I felt terrible. I was devastated that the client wasn't doing so well because I cared for them. I genuinely did. And I realized that my contract was going to be canceled along with many others in the company due to the latest news that we heard. So what did I do? I jumped on finding my next client at the time. So I went back out there networking again. I had bumped into a founder of a small business in the customer support industry, I remember, and the company solution itself was going to improve customer service for the small business sector. So I felt excited. I believed in what they were trying to do, and I was relieved that I found another client, right? And so after a couple of months of doing some work with them, I realized that the client wasn't in a position to pay for my services or the invoices. So once again, It was devastating. I had to make a tough decision and end the contract and find my next client. And it was in the middle of summer, I remember, during this time. And after some time networking again in the startup space, getting out there, going to these, you know, after-hour meetups where everyone is just dishing out ideas upon ideas. And there's so much positivity in the air. Everyone is excited. Everyone is, you know, just having fun talking about what they're working on. I found another founder there in one of these networking meetups in a startup scene at the time, and he was working on his educational business. He was very excited and shared insights with me since I came from that industry in my past. And in the many different directions the business was going, he was telling me, you know, what he was thinking about. And once again, I was excited. I was going to help him bring his ideas to fruition in assisting him with early stage research and development efforts at the time. And after some time consulting with the client and consulting for a bit of time with them, I'd realized that, you know, there wasn't any money coming into the client's business, which concerned me. As time went on, I realized the client didn't have the money to pay my fees, right? So I felt stuck and I felt frustrated. I couldn't believe this was happening again. I remember thinking there had to be a better way, right? I needed to end the contract and find my next gig. Now, some time had passed. Again, I had ran into an old acquaintance who was working with a very large e-commerce business at the time, and the business had IPO'd, and I went public, and it basically went public, and they were looking for some help with a new product they were researching and wanted to perform some R&D for a new idea. And so after accepting the contract, I had delivered my service for the next 30 days, right, working with them, hitting the streets, doing what I needed to do from a customer research standpoint. It was for a division of a company called Shopify at the time, right? So I started to invoice, but I didn't see response, right? And again, this is a large organization, right? So again, there were signs of worry on my end. I was having invoicing issues with the individual that I was working with from that organization. And so there were delays in payment, which set me back a bit, right? And I was getting increasingly, it was getting difficult to keep up with the flow of money coming into the business as bills started piling up on my end. Now, at this point, I did not feel secure in the business I was trying to build, and it felt very unstable. And so I canceled the contract and had to walk away. And this was the moment my wife to be at the time was starting to get antsy, right? We just met. She was learning about what I was doing. I was learning about what she was doing, started to get to know one another. And she was interested in hearing about, you know, our relationship status on where it was going. Now, as a man, I was telling her everything is fine and that I would be letting her know once I had things in order on my end. Now, deep down inside, I knew I was a wreck, right? Struggling to keep ahead above water, let alone think about, you know, taking myself to the next stage in our relationship. And this was a pivotal moment in my life. I was backed up on credit card payments. My day-to-day expenses were getting increasingly difficult to pay. I was getting collection calls from credit card companies demanding their payments. I was struggling to make mortgage payments just to get by, right? My superintendent from the apartment was constantly calling about past due payments of the utility fees that they have there. And my wife, to-be, was on the fence and wasn't happy about not getting an answer if we were getting married soon. So there was all this pressure, and there was always something up with my car at the time, too, I remember, which was giving a lot of trouble. I just needed some help, right? And that's when it hit me. You know, one evening, I was hit with a sharp pain in my chest in my apartment in Mississauga, Ontario, and I had reached my limit. I never felt this way before, as I had this constant pain and foreign pressure build up in my chest. And honestly, I'm more of a fitness guy. I'm into fitness, and this type of stuff doesn't happen to me. And so it kind of took me by surprise. And I admitted myself straight away to the closest clinic and went immediately to see a doctor at the time. And after being admitted and being hooked up to an ECG test machine to monitor my heart, I was asked a series of questions, I remember, to determine what was going on with me, right? All surrounding my fitness and nutrition, my work habits, my personal relationships, everything. I remember the doctor was really grilling me with questions. I remember laying there, you know, answering these questions, and also just laying down the doctor's office on that bed and looking and hooked up to this machine, you know, which made this buzzing sound as well, and this beeping sounds that come out of it, which was the ECG machine. And you know, after I answered all the questions, the doctor laughed, and I was lying there alone on this machine while it was monitoring me, and I was just staring up at the ceiling, at the, you know, those dirty ceiling tiles that they always have. And I was thinking, is this it? Is this how it's going to end? Then the doctor came back in with the diagnosis. She got me to sit up, and I sat up, and I was like, man, I'm sitting here thinking, is this it? Like, is there something that we can do, or should I change something drastically, right? And I remember the doctor came in with the diagnosis, and she was like, okay, you know what? This is hypertension, or it's called a silent killer, right? And due to high levels of stress, this is what happens. And so in that moment, that's when I decided, you know what? Like, things have to change. And she agreed. She totally told me, like, hey, you've got to change the way that you're living your life. Things need to change, right? From all the questions we went through, from everything that we, you know, we surveyed, you should come up with the realization that things need to change. And so I internally made that decision. I wasn't going to let this take me down, right? My father encountered having a heart attack. Why am I going to go through the same thing, right? I shouldn't be, right? I should be better, right? And I needed to think differently so that it wasn't going to affect me like this from a health perspective. And so I was going to change my mindset, which was key. It was key because I was always stressed out, and I was like, you know what? This is life, right? And so change it for the better and take things as they came without them affecting my health was one of my biggest goals that I set out to do. So I packed up everything in my apartment in Mississauga. I remember I sold my apartment, right? I sold it, and I got rid of all the debt. I got rid of the superintendent off my back. I got rid of the debt off the credit cards. I got rid of all the past due notices. the late mortgage payments, the late fees notices on my apartment. I got rid of all the phone calls that were coming in. I kept the car to be able to commute. I got rid of the curiously upset wife by setting a wedding date. So I actually set up a date and I said, yes, we're going to get married. Best of all, I got my health in order after that point. And the good news is I got married, right, to the woman who was with me in the most darkest and difficult times, right? We had a small wedding and gave up home ownership and had rented a small place to help us get through this period of time. And as time went on, I kept looking for clients, right? I spent late nights just searching, emailing, networking. I remember hoping, dreaming, just praying to God, like, come on, please. I'm now married. there was little to no progress made, and it was hard. It was getting difficult, and I was getting desperate. Ultimately, I had to make a decision. I stopped searching for contract gigs and stopped considering being a freelancer, like a contractor, right? I felt like a failure. I couldn't get what I was after. It was nuts. I remember thinking, not this again. Like, this was, you know, my... I can't go through this again. But I decided I needed to go back to the full time, right? And give up my dream of being a contractor for now. I remember looking through the wanted ads in the newspaper and looking for anything to pay the bills at the point, right? And this is, it's ridiculous. I took the first full-time job I could get, I remember. I was getting paid as much as I would have liked, but, you know, I just had to take it out of desperation. I wasn't getting much, right? As I was working, I noticed I was getting paid, but, you know, it wasn't enough. I had to struggle to even break even with my current expenses. It was bad. It was really bad. My daily travel costs, to give you an idea, to get to work, and lunch costs didn't even get covered by the payout of a daily wage. Like, it was nuts. I was having trouble making enough to even cover our basic necessities, right? It was so bad that at this point, I remember I started to ration my electricity, right? To that, our bills would be, so that our bills would not be high enough, right? And I remember doing all this research. I remember the water heater took up so much energy. Let's hook up a timer to it and only let it run for 6 hours. It doesn't need to run for 24 hours. I put on timers on all the electronics across the house. I did. And I put energy saving light bulbs everywhere. You know what I mean? To reduce our living expenses. It was nuts. It was a difficult time. But that's when I had to make a decision, right? A decision to change how things were headed. And I had to find a new full-time job, right? One which would pay enough and well enough. Then I joined another company as a full-timer. I found in the heart of the city, it was a digital agency which created custom solutions for their large clients, like a software house, like a digital agency. During my time, I realized that the company had only a few large clients, right? Which contribute to the company's bottom line, right? They only had a handful of clients, but really big ones. And as time went on, some of their large clients left them, leaving the agency in a very difficult situation financially. Now, at the time, the company was also in the middle of changing their business model entirely. They were changing to becoming more product-focused as opposed to service. So there were changes in the market. And as all businesses needed to do in order to survive, they needed to compete and thrive. They needed to switch over to this product-based company. And it was becoming more and more difficult for the company to make payroll, and they had to lay off half the employees on the service side to help adapt to the market. And I was a part of that half, unfortunately, I remember. So that's when I had felt vulnerable at that point. I remember this feeling inside, this false sense of security everyone had been feeding me, saying that full-time is secure, it's secure. I felt shattered. Like, it was not true in my case for some reason. That's when I realized nothing is secure, not even a full-time gig, right? At this point, and it was foolish of me to think so, to get back into it. Remembering how I could change my mindset about things, I told myself, this is how things were meant to play out for me, right? I kept my head up and I started looking again, right? I did the same thing. And as some more time went on, I joined another company. It was another agency as a full-timer in the city, which served many, many small clients this time. So I made sure that they had diversified their risk by serving multiple clients, not just a handful, right? So due to the companies being smaller in nature, I was spending a lot of time and energy doing various different things, right? It was getting burnt out in the process. And it felt like all the projects were all similar in nature, and the work seemed really redundant. I felt like I wasn't learning anything new and wasn't being challenged enough, as it was the same type of work over and over again. I felt like it was hard to introduce change or improvements to the organization or the projects as things ran as they did, and the owners didn't really think about improving existing processes there. And I remember there was this time when I had used up all my vacation time, right? All 2 weeks of my vacation time was gone. And I remember I had to take unpaid time off in order to spend more time with the family. I had used up all my 5 of my sick days that were paid in the year, and was taking unpaid sick days to help with recovery whenever I got sick. I didn't feel like I had enough time, honestly. And personally, at this time, me and my wife, we had moved out on in our own place, and I had to find something that would fulfill myself and provide for my family if I were to keep this up. I felt upset that I didn't have the right benefits to support my desire to travel or spend my time with my family. And that's when I realized that I couldn't get the freedom or flexibility I desired out of, again, this full-time opportunity. So I was at my wit's end at this point, and I was done with the 9-to-5 again. I was like, no more, I'm not doing this. However, I wasn't going to just jump out of the window just yet. I knew if I wanted to get out, I needed to do things differently than I had done before, and I had to learn and understand and take action. And so during this time, I worked at this agency. I used to take the train at the time in and out of the city. And on the train rides to work and back home, I began listening to podcasts because it would take about an hour or so. And so I would be reading some books too as well on business for the next 4 to 6 months. Those are the two things I did, podcasts and books. And I remember on my commute home one day, I was listening to a business podcast, and I can't remember the name of it, but I remember the guy on there who was a guest who came on. His name was Jason Swank, who had talked about marketing and sales. And that's when I thought, like, after listening to that episode, I really understood, like, this marketing and sales piece seems extremely interesting and something that I really didn't pay attention to before. That's when I thought, that's it. Like, I need to learn about marketing and sales if I ever wanted to get anything off the ground. And I remember I was so impressed by this episode on this podcast that I went home right away and I ended up searching up on who this Jason was, Jason Swank. And I ended up buying into his business mentorship program that he had running. I wanted to be equipped with the right knowledge before going into contracting a second time. I didn't want to fail again, right? And I wanted to really give it my all and not disappoint myself on the second attempt to get into it. So I dove into the business mentorship program he had. I remember spending nights and weekends, you know, telling my wife that, hey, you know, I'm making this investment, it's important to me. And so she respected that, gave me the time, and I dedicated that time to the program, just rereading and digesting the information, right? On the weekends, in the evenings, late nights, early mornings, on the train rides, I remember taking a notebook, writing all my notes in it. I remember this one time in the program where Jason himself spoke about bad clients, he said. And the conversation was about filtering in general, and he started talking about how this is important to gain an advantage, right? The one thing he said that stood out to me is that, and he keeps repeating this, he goes, "There are no bad clients, only bad prospecting." When he said that, that's when it hit me. I realized that that was it. All that time when I was contracting in the past, I wasn't focusing on who I wanted to work with. I was just doing what most contractors did and just took on the first opportunity that presented itself without actually putting it through a filter of my own. I wasn't doing anything to determine who I should be working with. I focused on properly selecting who I wanted to work with from that point on, right? And the moment I paid attention to who I was choosing to work with and who I did not want to work with, it completely changed everything for me. That's when I started to see more quality clients that were worth my time. I started to get the right types of attention and opportunities come my way after that point. By prospecting correctly, I was not just seen as just another contractor, but was seen as the perfect fit for who I wanted to work with. And that was the big difference. I started to book deals at some of the largest companies in the country. Not only did the clients want to work with me, but I was able to close larger than average deal sizes. You see, when I first started off, I was peddling deals between $2,000 to $30,000. As soon as I had my aha moment with Jason, I found on my prospecting and I focused on how to do it correctly, that's when things changed, right? The deals not only started to close faster, but also larger in size too. By focusing on who I wanted to work with and getting the right types of prospects, I was in a better position to deal with the right types of clients. And from that point on, I was able to close deals ranging from $90,000 to $109,000, then to $164,000, $176,000, and $274,000. I was blown away. It worked and worked really, really well. Like clockwork. Like I had repeatedly closed high-ticket contract deals with some of the world's most largest and recognizable brands, as well as worked with brands which have been included in the Fortune 50, 100, 500, the Forbes Global 2000, you know, America's best consulting firms. The biggest thing this time was clients ended up keeping their end of the bargain and were actually paying on time every time. There were no more payment issues as I had experienced before, right? I now could support my family and help them live a more fulfilling and abundant life while showing them the world. Make as much as I desired, and I chose the work I wanted to do, all while giving me the freedom and flexibility that I internally craved. Now, that's all cool and fun, right? It's great. However, the more important thing was that I found my calling, right? I had managed to be an entrepreneur and become my own boss in the end, right? So you see, this was the defining moment for me and one that I will never forget. The feeling of empowerment, autonomy, freedom, abundance, control, and growth was a real driving factor for me. All right, you experts. If you want to learn how to take your independent little business to the next level, go to highticketcontractor.com. We have a pilot program waiting just for you to do that. That's highticketcontractor.com.